Okay, welcome back. This is going to be very interesting, this hour tonight. I'm really looking forward to it. Karen Smith is back with us tonight, and we have a very special guest who will join us in just a few minutes. About a year ago, Karen was able to arrange to have King Cornelius III on this program. Now, you might say, who is King Cornelius III? Well, if you remember, he was on to make a very momentous announcement. He is the king of the indigenous Khoisan nation of South Africa, and he announced a year ago, here on this program and elsewhere, that there was a secession about to take place of his peoples and others from South Africa to establish the new sovereign nation of Good Hope, basically on the left-hand side, the Western Cape area of South Africa. It was a truly an extraordinary thing to happen. I'm always in favor of secession, whether it be a secession here in the U.S. or certainly in South Africa, to try to save so many human beings whose lives are in imminent danger and who are suffering terribly, as you heard last night from Karen. Karen, welcome back.
Thanks so much. Before we start, I'd really like to thank you for giving us this time at such short notice. But the king has got a really big announcement to make, and I'm very excited by it, and I'm sure your audience will be as well. So without further ado, good evening, King Cornelius. I'm so excited to be speaking to you again, especially with such big news.
Good morning, Karen. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Hello, King Cornelius. Welcome back, Your Majesty. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful being back again.
Very good, sir. All right. What have you to tell us? What are you going to tell the world now? What's going on with the wonderful concept, the actual fact of the sovereign nation of Good Hope? What's happening?
Oh, many, many, many things happened. It's been an exciting year, challenging year.
Uh-huh.
When I got back from America last year, this time, I got back the 21st of March, and in South Africa we celebrate Human Rights Day. And the next day was my birthday, which is also the first day of the lunar year.
Wow. All right.
And then we sat down and we discussed how we're going to go forward. And on the 16th of July, 2017, we went to South African Parliament and gave the South African government an eviction notice, saying that they have to leave the country within 5 days. But I asked the professor, why 5 days? You know, when you get an eviction notice, it's just 1 day in South Africa. Sheriff comes to your house and says, you're evicted, and immediately you're out.
Yeah.
So he says, well, we got to give them 5 days for the government to leave the country and take away the argument that they don't have enough time. But also because we're Khoi, we're First Nation people, we're kind people. So we went to Parliament. I had about 26 security guards with me.
Good.
Exciting moment.
Yeah.
Stopped in the middle of the road, blocked off all the traffic, got out fully traditionally dressed. Walked into Parliament, I said, I come to see the President's office. And they said to me, well, don't worry, the office will come to you. And they sat there and they came, they received the documents, they stamped and signed it, they received it. And as we walked out of Parliament, we put the eviction notice against the door of Parliament. And my people started shouting outside, those that were gathering there, they were excited.
Yes.
I stood for a few moments, and then they went and they took down, in front of our parliament, there's four flagpoles and four flags of South Africa. Mm-hmm. And they took down all four flags. And then they told me I must leave. Got me in the car and they left for my safety. And then my generals took down four flags of South Africa and hoisted four of the sovereign state of Good Hope flags. And the police were standing there, didn't know what to do.
Your Majesty, you had your generals take down outside of Parliament the four flags of South Africa and put up the four flags of Good Hope. That's a pretty amazing gesture. And yeah.
And the police didn't know what to do. And the general said to him, you know, you see the eviction notice on the door?
Uh-huh.
You've been evicted. So now I'm informing you that the country is no longer yours. So they're doing the flags, and the flags were flying for 2 hours because nobody knew what to do. And according to the information I got, the police were hiding behind the walls, not knowing what to expect.
That's funny.
So when we were gone after 2 hours, they eventually took the flags down. And now we were excited now. We were waiting 5 days.
Yes.
5 days came, and I said, okay, give them another day. Called a press conference. We sent out to 700 different journalists or media houses.
Sure.
30 of them said they're coming. We got the convention center in Cape Town, and again, full VIP protection, entry to Cape Town. And only three journalists came. Three. I was shocked. When any other political party calls a press conference, they have the full contingency.
Well, they show up where else? These journalists had obviously been talked to and told in their best interest they better not show up. Three did out of 700 notices you sent out. So you did your best, but that's the kind of government that South Africa has now. It's a tyrannical regime. It is not a democracy. It's not a republic. It's a very ugly communist dictatorship. Now, those are my words, Your Majesty. I don't expect you to say yes or no, but I'm just telling our listeners how I see it.
And it was pony newspapers that came, and the one journalist was very excited because she's also quiet.
Ah.
And she did a story, did a live stream in front of Parliament, where I spoke.
Uh-huh.
And it went out immediately, and people went crazy. Because people were gathering in front of Parliament, waving our flags, and they were walking around Parliament for 6 days, around the whole Parliament building for 6 days, with the flags.
How wonderful.
Some of them went on the hunger strike, and I told them, no, please, we have to live for the sovereign state of Gudu. Please don't die for the sovereign state of Gudu. Live for it.
Indeed.
Unbelievably, all three of those journalists lost their jobs
mm-hmm.
because they covered the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not surprised.
Even the lady that has the South African chair at Parliament for SABC News, she was redeployed to another department.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found out that all the journalists told us that nobody was allowed to cover the story of the sovereign state of Gudu at all.
Mm-hmm.
No radio. Mm-hmm. No newspaper, mm-hmm. no television, nobody was allowed to cover the story. And I said to one journalist, I says, I can't understand how you're going to be a journalist. If something's so interesting, you're not covering it. Because you are saying that I need to make the world aware of what is really happening. And you can't, you're told not to do it. And he says, well, we need to consider this. If we do, we might lose our license, our media license. So I understand the problem there.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to go, unfortunately, we had to go in hiding for a few days because of the threats in our lives. And we were really threatened. And my wife and my son, we went into about 6 hours and the VIP protection. We left, went into hiding for a few days. And then eventually I says, you know, my time is in God's hands. Whatever needs to happen will happen. If it's a sniper, then I'll never see it. If it's an assassin, I'll never know about it. So why am I hiding? I've done all these things for 20 years. I've been fighting for 20 years in the open with no fear. Why am I hiding now? And I said to my guys, come, let us go. And we came home and we kept a little bit low profile, but we were still busy working. But you can understand my wife, being a mother and being a woman, there's a major effect on her emotional state, knowing that we had 24-hour security in front of our house, 3-hour shifts from 6 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and from 2 till 10, and from 10 till 6.
Yes, I understand.
In the heart of Utah.
Yeah.
And the doors have to be closed at 8 o'clock, and nobody goes out. And it was quite tough. It was a whole change of mindset, a change of attitude. But we understood that the cause is bigger than us. And in the interperiod, we sat down and we started strategizing. And I said to one young lady, when my wife asked her, when are you getting married? She says, oh, it's another 2 more years I've got to work and the next egg, and then I'm going to get married. And I said to her, you know, in life, there's 4 things one needs to do all the time. And the first thing you need to do is to strategize. And the second thing you need to do is to plan. And the third thing you need to do is to prepare. And once you've done all that, then you execute. Those are the 4 things in life,
right,
in every aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said to my people around me, my advisors and my strategists, I says, we need to apply these 4 things in our life. And I says, on the 2nd of February, I called a meeting, a gathering, and I said to my people, I says, on the 11th of December, we were going to take over the country. And then we found out that we had some snakes in the grass. Some people that was planted here by government to find out what we're really doing.
You had moles in your organization, huh?
Mm-hmm. No, we call them snakes in South Africa.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And then on the 16th of December in South Africa, it's Reconciliation Day, which is also my anniversary. We're going to do it that day. And we found that we had more moles, or more snakes.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't do it. And then we said to the people, we're going to have Christmas, celebrate Christmas in the service that we're going to prepare yourselves. And then we discovered there was more of them.
Wow.
It was disheartening, knowing that, you know, you're giving the people hope, and then for their own protection, you have to withdraw that.
Are these Khoi people?
Khoi and white.
Oh, my. That's very disheartening. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the 2nd of February, I called a meeting and I said to them, you know, when we started all this, we were in code red. Now, the reason why we used code red, because our codes we used was different to the rest of the world. And I said code red was our strategizing period. And I says, the day the president announces, I cannot give you a date when to go into Operation Freedom.
Right.
But the day the president announces the date for the elections, that is the date Operation Freedom starts. Then we go into code amber or code orange. And they say, ask me now, what's code orange? I said, you look at the traffic lights. The red means we're stopping and strategizing where we're going to go to.
Sure.
And then it goes to amber or orange. We put the car in gear and we're ready to go. I says, and then we're going to code amber or orange, and then we're ready to go. Because our planning is now in place. And the 7th of February, when the president had the State of the Nation address, he announced, and they say this is the most watched State of the Nation address ever. Because that day, they were waiting for the date to be announced. And when the president announced the date, the 8th of May, 2019, the date of the elections, in South Africa, people went crazy. They went crazy because now Operation Freedom starts. We code amber.
Got it.
And on the 2nd of March, I called another meeting. And I had about 250 of my leaders around me. And I said to them, we are now going to charge. Let me put it better. I said to them, we are now going to go to court. We have given the government an eviction notice. We have done everything in our power. They've ignored us. And in the eviction notice, it says that if you ignore this eviction notice, under international law, it is deemed that you have accepted it. So we now know that they have accepted because they told us they're ignoring this eviction notice.
Very good. May I say something, Your Majesty, to our listeners? The planning for the declaration of secession to create the sovereign nation of Good Hope, was a long process, followed all laws, all applicable laws. This wasn't a spontaneous event. How many years was this in the planning, Your Majesty, or how long of a period of time was it?
Oh, we've been fighting for 20 years, but the planning for the secession was 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, since the 24th September 2017, our action started. When the declaration of secession in the castle, knocking a board in the ground saying there's a cede away from South Africa, the Western Cape, the Northern Cape, and part of the Eastern Cape from by the Fish River.
Right.
So I said, because they've ignored us, and on the 2nd of February, I said there will be no elections in the sovereign state of Gido. No elections.
Uh-huh.
Because we have no politics in the sovereign state of Gido. The right to self-determination is our key factor here. And I said, people, when you make a cross, when you go vote, you're giving away your power to somebody else and says, you decide for me what is best for my life.
That's fascinating and absolutely correct. Yes, yes.
In the sovereign state of Gido, we have the right to self-determination, and we have human capital investment, human intelligence, opportunity freedom, capability freedoms. I says, you decide what is best for you within the parameters of the law. So we have no voting yet. So on the 2nd of March, my people were excited. I says, what do we do now? Where do we go from here? I says, I have a date. I says, I'm giving you a date today. And they were excited. Oh, they were. Some of them were crying and shouting. And I said to them, on the 5th of March, I'm going to the High Court in South Africa and apply for an urgent court order, for a cease and desist order, that there will be no elections in the sovereign state of Gudo. And now we had to plan. And Professor Nagin, I drafted up the documents. Professor Nagin added more documents. And we had about nearly 200-page document to submit to court as our affidavit. And then on Monday morning, the 4th, I sat and I prayed and I had this revelation, epiphany, that I need to do it today. So I got two of my guys and I went up to the High Court. I said one thing and I said, go file the documents and go get a case number. And he came back and he says, they can't take it. I says, why? He says, the format is wrong. So I go to one of the lawyers there in Cape Town. Nobody wants to help me. No lawyer in Cape Town wants to help me.
Nobody would touch
me. To give me the proper format.
Mm-hmm.
Because the charge sheet, well, the covering sheet is King Kubar Cornelius III versus first respondent, State President Cyril Ramaphosa, mm-hmm. second respondent, the South African government. And they told me I'd need to have a notice of motion. So I've never done that in my life before.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, there was an old friend of mine I haven't seen in 10 years that owns a stationery company opposite Parliament. And I says, Tom, please help me, man. He says, I can't. And there was one young lawyer standing. He says, here's your king, help him, please. Well, he said to me, you know, I can't, this is company property. And he says, get a template for the king, man. He says, the boy got him the computer, got a template. He says, now email me the template, Tom says to him. So he emails him, and he prints the template. And he says, now if you go home, you do that. If you have any problems, come back to me again tomorrow. And we come home, and we strategize.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know, and something to 12 the evening, I was still at the police station stamping the affidavits and signing affidavits in front of the Commission of Oaths for our filing document. Tuesday morning, early, the guys went through to Cape Town and they didn't want me to go with the security reasons. And they went through and I'm sitting at home with my security team because I need to go through to Cape Town, but I need them to finish everything first.
Right.
And I get a message on my phone and says, G2 has gone into the High Court, which is the guy going in. And another message, G2 has come out of High Court. They said it's too early. And now we're sitting with holding our breaths. And then again, G2 has gone into High Court. And half an hour later, praise God, we got a number. And, you know, Jeff, it was an emotion that I had never experienced before. Never.
I
and we
believe
were
it.
Crying and shocked.
Yeah.
I was in tears. It was.
That's wonderful.
You know, and then I got dressed, and they gave me a bulletproof vest and got in the car, and the cars, we went through the Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine how vigilant my people are around me. Because they're saying that if anything happens to the king, the Shabbos Levitim is gone. So we drive through the Cape Town, which is about 50 kilometers away from us.
Mm-hmm.
Smooth travel, no hassles. Get into Cape Town, stop in front of the High Court, and the South African police are there again. And my people are there, and the flags are flying. And I get out of the car, get traditionally dressed. And my security taking up the steps of the High Court. And they give me the document that the case number. And I stand there and I says, today. They can imagine, Jed, how what a feeling it is standing on top of the steps of the High Court and saying, mm-hmm, my people, mm-hmm, today.
Yeah.
There will be no elections in the sovereign state of Israel. There will be no voting. People don't waste their time and waste their money to put up both posters and banners and lobbying for elections. For in the Western Cape, the Northern Cape, and parts of the Eastern Cape, there will be no elections. Because now we have a court case saying they have to defend.
That's really remarkable. No voting needed. You'll have laws, but the public, the citizens of the sovereign nation of Good Hope, will be expected to follow, and they will, the laws. They won't vote for people to betray them, which is what most politicians do. It's a remarkable revolutionary thing to do. Okay, so where are we right now, Your Majesty? Where are we? It's been a year. You've jumped through so many hoops. You've done it all legally. What's going on?
So now we're in Operation Green.
Okay.
Now we're in Operation Prepare. Prepare. So we've gone through the three phases in life, and now we need to do the last one. Execute.
Right.
And now people want to know, but when is it going to happen? When are we going to execute? When are we going to close the borders? When are we going to... And I said to them, okay, I'm going to be courageous, and I'm going to tell you. But I'm not going to give you a date. I'm going to give you an event.
Okay.
And I said to them, you know, when I got back last year from the United Nations after applying for observer status at the General Assembly,
mm-hmm,
I got back on the end of the lunar year. The end of the lunar year, which is the 21st of March, which is also Human Rights Day. And I said to them, and the next day was the first day of the lunar year, which is also my birthday. So you people can decide for yourself and analyze for yourself what day it is going to be.
Got it.
I tell you, Jeff, it was an emotion second to none. It was crazy.
I can believe it.
People that wasn't invited, got up and went and left immediately. And I knew that those were the molds that was placed inside.
What a wonderful
but
story.
We had this stage. Yeah. We are at this stage in our life now when there is no fear. No more.
Mm-hmm.
What must be, must be. There's 15 million people that no longer, that have hope now that it's going to happen.
Go ahead, Your Majesty. Go ahead.
A few days ago, I said to people, you know, last day I said, Uhuru is coming. Now, Uhuru is white genocide. I said, Uhuru is coming. I said, no, Uhuru is not coming anymore, eh? It's already here. It's already here.
Yes.
So things have escalated so drastically in South Africa. The genocide, the corruption, it is crazy. It is crazy. And we're not talking about millions of rands anymore that's being stolen. We're talking about billions of rands that's being stolen. In our faces, the government knows about it. Government
yes.
steals it.
Yeah. The country is being looted right now. Right now.
I spoke to one of my economists. And he says to me, we had their team had a discussion, and they said, in South Africa, it was a company that would have been liquidated because it's unrehabilitated. It's an unrehabilitated company. Cannot be saved.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa, there's no hope for them. You know, it is when I look at the rest of South Africa, I'm not looking at the sovereignty that we live now, because somebody asked me the other day, now what about your people in South Africa? And I had a tear in my eye knowing that I cannot help everybody. Because those in South Africa has got to live through the genocide and the abuse and everything, while the sovereignty of the Dubu is going to have freedom, opportunity, freedoms, and all the other freedoms that is attached to sovereignty of the Dubu. And those that cannot come have to live there.
Yes.
Because now in South Africa, the South African government is now eventually going to pass a bill to include the Khoisan people into the House of Traditional Leaders. So they call it Traditional Leaders and Khoisan Bill. And Khoisan Bill as an afterthought.
I see. We call that over here, they're throwing you a bone. It's a joke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I say to the people, I says, can you not understand? Can you not understand that the South African government is making you second-class citizens?
That's right.
We have no right over the land, but the black chief has authority over the land that you as a Khoi chief is living on. The government is telling you that they will decide who is Khoi chiefs and Khoi kings for a period of 5 years only. I says they can decide our culture for us for their benefit.
Yeah.
And you people agree to this so that you can get money, so that you can stop being hungry. I says, and the minute the president signs this bill into power, he then has the authority and the power to go to the United Nations and remove their signature from the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous People, saying that the Khoisan people no longer want to be First Nation people in South Africa. They rather want to live under the rules and regulations of South Africa.
What a disgusting trick. I get it. I see it.
And because the people are so needy, and they're hungry, and they are being given a bone. Not a bone, Jeff. Crumbs. They're being given crumbs.
Crumbs, yeah.
Crumbs, and saying, we'll give you a salary every month, and we'll give you a food basket, and just agree to the bill. We can always amend the bill later. We can amend it later. Don't worry. We know that you're First Nation, but we can't put it in the bill now because we're going to have conflict with the ANC and all the other black people. How can we give away our First Nation right status for a bread basket?
Right.
This is what's going to happen in South Africa. And I said yesterday morning, I said, the bill has no effect on the sovereign state of Dudu because we're not part of South Africa. So this is where we are now. We are.
You've already left, Your Majesty. You're gone. I mean, Good Hope is gone. They can't do that.
On the steps of Parliament, like what I say is, we are finished. We are finished.
Right.
Sovereign state of Dudu is ready. And now I need to speak to my general, says we need to plan and prepare properly so that we can have a peaceful transition. And I still wish, and I pray for a peaceful transition. I don't want my people to die.
No, of course not. Let me ask you a question, if I might. Karen last night explained that the ANC communist, Marxist, racist, genocidal government has been flooding Good Hope, the Western Cape, with hundreds of thousands of lowest class South Africans to try to take control of elections with a number of people voting. Is this going to be an issue and how are you going? I don't want you to give away any secrets, but this is a big problem. if they have been putting that many people into Good Hope.
Oh, they have. They've been bussing people in like crazy. Oh, they have. We know that. And now these people are here, and they are flooding our economy. The water is... We have a water problem in the Western Cape.
Yes.
And the Northern Cape. Some of our dams are dry because the amount of people that's here are using more than what we've been using all our life.
I understand.
So the demand on the country has become bigger because the amount of people has been busting. So now there's no elections. Their purpose of being here is no longer needed.
Got it.
They just got to go home.
They've got to go home. Yeah.
They've got to go home. Over the festive period, over the December period, the Minister of Transport said, he says, you know, many people are leaving the Western Cape to go home, their homelands.
Who's this? Who said this, Your Majesty? Your Minister of Transport, or is this the ANC?
The South African Minister of Transport said, the people that's going home over the festive period must be drive safely. Because they're going home to their homelands. And we can say exactly the same. They must go home. I can't tell you how we're going to do it because that is none of my business.
Understand.
That is that department's business.
Yes.
And they'll just inform me when it happens and how it's going to happen. But that's what I'm saying. We're now in a period of preparing.
Got it. So
there's no elections. People are going to waste their time. And, you know, when I said, after the 2nd of February, and I said there's going to be no elections in the Sovereign State of Goodhome, and I came home, and in the area, there was no posters on the polls. Normally, we have posters on the polls advertising various political parties.
Yeah.
And it's 3 months to elections, and there's no posters, and 2 months to elections, and no posters. And one morning, I wake up, and only in my road, where I live, there's posters.
Well, that's pretty obvious. Yeah.
And then for a week there was... You can speak, Jeff.
No, you go ahead.
Only for a week there was posters in my road. The next week, the whole area was filled with posters because nobody removed the posters. So they thought, oh no, maybe it's just another wild screaming child throwing a tantrum, saying stuff like that. So now when I did the High Court matter, saying there's no cease and desist order.
Yes.
My wife put it on Facebook, on the Royal House of the Khoisan page, Facebook, and also on her Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
And we found out that within 6 or 7 hours, we had 10,500 views. And she so shows me now, we have 21,000 views of the video that was made in front of Parliament.
Yeah, the one I
sent, Jeff. Karen? Yes, go ahead, Karen.
That's the video I sent to you. And the most amazing thing about that, for me, is that it was a South African Broadcasting Corporation reporter that was interviewing the king.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's the first time that state-controlled media has paid the smallest, tiniest bit of attention to any of this. And I don't know what King's opinion is, but I'm shaking my head, and it is significant. But I'm trying to work out this.
What was the date of this video again? I've forgotten.
This morning.
Okay. This is hot off the griddle then.
Absolutely. You got one of the first copies of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as the King said to me, you have been an absolute staunch supporter. And he feels that he owes it to you for you to be the first person in America to announce this.
Well, I'm very grateful.
So I'm very grateful that you gave us time at such short notice. But for me, it is very significant that state-owned media interviewed the king this morning.
This is extraordinary. This is extraordinary. It is.
There is significance in that I'm unable to see.
Now, this is, Your Majesty, this is a very big step, I would suggest. I hope there is more to follow it up. As the media goes, so goes, in many ways, the fluidity of the effort to move forward and make this happen. This is a big deal. Very good. Very good.
And then last night we watched the news, last night, according to our time, we watched the news to see an interview on the news, and nothing happened. No interview. It wasn't broadcast. Even though the state interviewed us, it wasn't presented.
I understand.
I got a phone call from one of the newspaper journalists, and he says, now I need to finish the story so they're going to the newspaper tomorrow morning. So we opened an opinion in one of the newspapers, one of the big newspapers called The Burger in South Africa.
Yes.
And everyone's waiting, holding their breath, hoping some media person, these guys, have the courage to put it out there and saying, this is what's happening.
Well, it's up on the internet, and that's YouTube, and that's, I guess, Facebook is where it's primarily being seen. This is good. This is good.
So go ahead.
Were you not going to go to the ICC to lodge the cease and desist, or were you not going to bother with that?
Somebody asked me on Saturday at the meeting, says, are you sure South Africa is going to give you a court number, a case number for your court case? I said that under South African law and international law, they have to. They have no choice. So they've tried various methods of saying the format is not right. Because I've been to the High Court personally in 2010 when I charged Jacob Zuma for cultural genocide.
Yes.
And I went into court and I said, please help me. I need to charge the president.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped me. They gave me all the papers. Now when I'm in the charge, several of them are saying that the format is not right.
Hmm.
But we've been educated over the past 9 years. So it is our own fault that the format is not right.
Your Majesty, are you getting any international recognition so far? We talked about this a year ago, what you expected. What has happened in the past year? Any other countries, any other ambassadors, any other organizations? Have they stepped forward to acknowledge Good Hope at all?
In writing, no. Verbally, some of the ambassadors says, no, we support you.
Yes.
But nobody's getting up and saying, yeah, we are supporting you. Nobody. The only country that came to have a visit and talk to us was America, ironically.
Very ironic.
One of the people from America came and says, we don't have an ambassador in South Africa, but I was sent by the embassy to have a half an hour meeting with him. So he said, no, fine. And half an hour later, he still sat. And 3 hours later, he still sat. And 3.5 hours later, he said, I need to go now.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, can I please have a photograph with you? Because I need to show them that I was here and I had a meeting with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in contact and communicating with the State Department, your State Department, from that time till now.
I see. Where are you going to set up your capital in Good Hope? What is your projected capital city?
Oh, Cape Town. Cape Town.
Always Cape Town. Okay.
Yes. My people have plans already, and I don't want to spoil them, the opportunity. It's their plans. But we have been planning and strategizing now for the past year of how the things to go put into place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not a willy-nilly thing. It is proper planning. My son has a saying in life. He says, Daddy, failure in life is planning not properly implemented. That's all failure is.
The wise young man. I must tell you, and I think I mentioned this a year ago when we spoke, I am, and I'm sure many, many of our listeners, whether they be citizens of the United States or not, are ashamed that this country, the formerly United States of America, has not stepped forward to protest with the illegal, illicit government of South Africa, the treatment of not only whites, but of coloreds and others down there. It is outrageous what's going on there, and I am deeply and profoundly ashamed that not one person in this alleged government here has stood up to do anything. It is a disgrace. And I want you to know that there are a lot of American citizens and others listening around the world who are with you 100%.
Thank you very, very much. And a small favor, please, when you say your prayers at night in the morning, please remember us in your prayers, because we need all the prayers that we can get.
We will.
So that our transition becomes a peaceful and successful transition. That's the most important. It must be successful. We know we've done everything by the book.
And you have
mentioned about the International Criminal Court. Yes, these are options that we have in place, Karen, and we're putting things in place, and our documentation is in place. Our legal minds are working overtime. So all those things are in place. Our contingency is in place. But I often say to people, we only have one plan, and that's Plan A. Because God is the CEO of our country, and we only have one plan. We don't have a Plan B.
Very good.
So we know where we're going.
Very good. You have one shot at this. You know, you don't have a Plan B, C, D, E, E, F, G. You know, you've got one shot, and it's got to get right first time round.
Right.
I'd like to tell Jeff what they did with your original paperwork, sending it to the law school.
Oh.
Yeah, because that was funny. That is very funny.
When they brought the first bill out for the Khoisan people, Cape Town University took the bill, the law department, and they pulled it apart. And they called the Khoisan leaders together at the hotel, and they explained to us how detrimental this bill is, how racist it is, how unconstitutional it is. And they made the points that they found, the law department of UCT, University of Cape Town found, and it's unconstitutional.
They said your bill is unconstitutional and racist. What a joke.
No. Let me explain properly. The bill that the South African government wanted to put for the Khoisan people.
Yes.
That bill is unconstitutional.
Yes.
The one I spoke about earlier. So South African government took our documentation and went to Wits University and gave it to the law department. Because we need to understand that Cyril Ramaphosa used to be a lecturer of law at the university.
I see.
And he sends it to the law department, and they come back to him and they says there's no loopholes in our documentation.
Oh, very good. Well, I missed it. Okay, good. Very good. Well, that is a laugh. Yes.
It is. And now South Africa doesn't know what to do and how to go about it, because how do you challenge something that is no loopholes in?
That's funny. Well, congratulations. That's another testimonial to the amount of work and the effort and the intelligence that has gone into this. They couldn't find anything wrong with it. That's funny.
The man that's responsible for that is Professor Winston P. Nagin.
Yes.
He's our stalwart.
I remember the name.
I says, Prof, it's finished. He's a retired professor now, Professor Emeritus of the Florida State University.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And he was excited because it's finished. He says, now you guys need to do everything right.
Well, so, congratulations on that. Your Majesty, thank you for being here again. I know that, again, an awful lot of people are holding good thoughts, the best thoughts for you and your people and all peoples of goodwill who are involved with Good Hope. And I'll be here to help in any way I can. You just keep that in mind, please, sir.
Thanks very, very much, Jeff. And you will have a good evening further. Karen, thank you very, very much again. God bless you all and keep on praying for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
King Cornelius III of the Sovereign Nation of Good Hope. It's a birthing process, Karen. It's one step at a time. And to have the university like that unable to find anything wrong with the bill is extraordinary.
I did it one day today when people asked, I think it might have been, you might have asked me what was happening, and I said, well, they tried to put this document apart.
Yeah.
And they're scrutinizing every full stop, every comment.
Yeah, I couldn't, we're losing you a little bit. I couldn't actually understand the king when he was describing that, but I got it figured out. The line is not real clear at times. Like right now, I can't hear you. So let's see if you come back. Okay, there you are now. All right.
Yeah, I think that's the South African line giving trouble. That's, I did say that they were scrutinizing this and trying to find loopholes in it.
Yes.
Because they could have thrown the whole thing apart.
Yes, aside. Yes.
You know, that was part of the long delay, was that this, as articles of secession,
yes,
were being torn up, well, trying to be torn apart, mm-hmm, by the top legal minds in South Africa.
Couldn't do it.
And of course they delayed and delayed, obviously, because they wanted to just draw this thing out as long as they could.
Sure.
But now they couldn't find a damn thing wrong with it. So that must have been a real bloody nose for them, you know, after trying so hard to discredit the movement.
I would imagine that one or more professors is probably unemployed now for not finding something wrong.
More than likely. But Professor Nagin has been involved in secession in South American countries. So he knows how it's done. He knows the legalities. He knows the ins and outs of it.
He's a brilliant man. Yeah.
He is. He's an incredibly brilliant man. So we were very lucky that a Coy professor of the University of Florida took this, did this for us. And
Yes.
But, you know, one of the things was, too, that he was under scrutiny. Everybody who's been connected with the king was also under scrutiny.
Sure.
So you understand that as your government is scrutinizing everybody involved with President Trump,
right,
the South African government was trying at the same time to discredit anybody involved with the king.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an incredibly up and down journey. I think very much like a roller coaster ride. The people are hyper excited one moment, and then oh my, you know, nothing's happening. So it's been really hard, but I'm really glad that we were able to tell the world something, because there's been so much derision in a way about, oh yeah, well, this was another upstart, just trying to make a name for himself. And I am happy that we are able to tell them, excuse me, you don't understand how much work goes into forming a new country. I mean, how many new countries have been formed in your world?
I can't even imagine. But I can say, though, is everything you have ever said and the king has said and that I've seen, by the book, Professor Nagin is... Absolutely. He has thrown these people a curveball and they don't know what to do with it.
Exactly. And so they've just, they really were silly. They seem to have been working under the premise that if you ignore it for long enough, it'll just go away.
Yeah.
And because nothing was publicly said, although they had, as the king said, the snakes, lots of in the movement, lots of them.
Yeah.
They still felt that they had the upper hand and this thing was just going to disappear. And it's not going to disappear. Look, we all pray for the success of this because it is the only hope for the genuine minorities in South Africa, the coloreds, the Khoisan, the whites, and the Afrikaners. There is, as we discussed last night, there is no other hope for them.
No.
They can't escape and they're going to stay there and be murdered. So, you know, we can only pray for every success for the king and queen in this endeavor, because if it was ever needed, it's now. Now, as I spoke about last night, with the elections coming up and the changing of the constitution,
mm-hmm,
things have reached critical mass, mm-hmm, in South Africa. And I feel that the ANC government, they are inciting the populace to rise against minorities now. And because it's an electioneering thing, you know, you
have
to...
Sure, of course. Yes.
Your common enemy.
Yeah.
And they're even threatening the Indian population now. So after the whites, it's Indian.
Uh-huh.
But in the long run, the Khoisan have been treated worse than the whites have been in South Africa. Because, as the king told you originally, they're not even accepted as a people. They're not even flora and fauna. They just are, you know. I don't know. They're not classified as people.
It's really disgusting beyond words.
Yeah. So they have been treated very badly.
Karen, is there anything at the United Nations worth pursuing at this point?
No, I don't believe so. The United Nations is a useless nation, quite honestly. And they're not in favor of...
Oh, I despise the United Nations. I understand.
The only reason that we went there is because under international law, that's what you have to do. In order to do the whole process correctly, we did it correctly. We went there. If it was left to the king, he would have said the same thing. The useless nations, why bother? But under international law, if you have not done that, you've missed a step, and they can come back and tell you it's illegal.
Got it.
So it had to be done that way, no matter what our opinion of the United Nations might be. That was a step that had to take place.
We're just about out of time. In fact, we're over time. But let me ask one other question. There are many countries around the world, and I'm sure some of them don't particularly care for South Africa's ANC communist Marxist government. Is there any way to seek recognition from some of those countries who are fair-minded and understand what's going on in South Africa? Is that a step?
As I understand it, the king has sent letters out to just about every single Western, Eastern, European, every embassy nation.
Yes.
But what I think is people are playing wait and see. So they don't want to throw their weight behind
somebody.
Nobody
wants to be first. I get it.
And once the first person does it, there'll be an avalanche. But they don't want to throw their weight behind something that
they're afraid. I know. Too many entanglements, too many financial issues. Trade issues that can be worked against people who would otherwise step forward and recognize them. Well, I hope someone does. That's the first thing that has to happen, I think. Karen, thank you for arranging this with the king. It's good news. Progress is being made. It's slow, but it's being done properly. And that is, that's extraordinary.
Well, you don't build a... Rome wasn't built in a day. Well, the sovereign state of Good Hope wasn't built in a day either.
No.
You can't just suddenly appear it out of nowhere, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
So
very
thank
good.
You again, Jeff. And you have our assurance that the next step you will be the first one to know.
Well, thank you. All right. I'll send you the audio of the program as soon as I get it. Spread it around. Wish it had been a little more clear, but I think we heard 95% clearly of what the king said, and it was very impressive, very encouraging.
He's a very impressive man.
He's a wonderful man.
He's incredible.
Yeah,
you cannot speak to this man and doubt his sincerity.
No, he's extraordinary.
Anyway, thank you very, very much, Jeff.
Okay,
and thank
Karen.
You.
All right. You be well. Take care.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Ms. Karen Smith. And it's really an amazing story when you think about it. And if one country will stand forward and recognize Good Hope, I think we may have a whole different ballgame real quick. All right. That's our program tonight. Unique things for you to consider, as we always try to present. And we will be back tomorrow night in 21 hours. See you then.